Thanks for joining Iowa Public Radio for a monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations, the Iowa Arts Showcase. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Welcome to our April edition of the Iowa Arts Showcase. The University of Iowa's new opera theater director, Bill Tyson, shares a few details about his background and the University of Iowa's upcoming production of Deflatermouse. Dr. Lee Nelson reviews six decades of Metropolitan Chorale music making, along with their upcoming 60th anniversary concert. Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble explores the world of music school grads learning how to be folk musicians. Stephen Kennedy, guitarist and current president of the Heart of Iowa's Guitar Society, talks about their April recital showcasing an amazing guest French guitarist. And we'll speak with the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist Vadim Kolodenko and delve into his upcoming Gallagher Bluedorn performance. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase.
I would like to encourage people that, you know, some people, if they haven't been to the opera a lot, maybe feel a little unsure about it or it might not be their thing. This would be a great introduction to anyone who has not been to an opera before for a couple of reasons. One, we are singing it in English, so it'll be very accessible to the audience members. And two, it's a comic piece with great tunes, with really, really fun songs. So if someone has not been to the opera before, or even a younger, you know, audience member, I think it'd be a great introduction to the world of opera because it's one of the more accessible pieces that we'll do. And I think it'd just be a great introduction to anyone wanting to come to the opera for the first time. I think it would make them an opera lover.
Bill Tyson, recently appointed associate professor and director of opera at University of Iowa. Bill has directed over 100 theater and opera productions all across the country. He has worked frequently on the university level as a director and lecturer.
I've been here as a guest quite a bit over the years. The first time I came to Iowa City to the University of Iowa to direct an opera was in 1998. And actually that year, the 98-99 academic year, I was the interim director of opera just for the year. And since that time, I think I've been here seven or eight times as a guest director since 1998, between now. So I certainly knew a lot about the school and had enjoyed being a guest director. The last 10 years, I've been the artistic director of Skylight Opera Theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and was based out of New York for about 20 years and worked as a freelance performer and director for both theater and opera. So in a nutshell, that's me.
And so how did you get into theater and opera? Are you a singer?
I am a singer. I'm much more of a musical theater singer. I'm from Milwaukee originally and worked at the Skylight Opera Theater as a young apprentice. And there was one music director there who thought I could have an opera career, but I really couldn't. I didn't have the real high notes of a true operatic tenor or the real low notes of a true operatic bass baritone. But musical theater was a really good fit for me vocally. So started performing in musical theater and some operetta, but never grand opera. But as a director, I started working in theater and musical theater and then slowly evolved into the world of directing in the opera house. So that was sort of my foray into the world of opera. So I have never been a grand opera performer, but I have performed in all other venues and direct all kinds of opera and musical theater.
Tell us about some of the places you have been a guest director.
I've been at the Santa Fe Opera, which was a treat to work there. It's really one of the finest summer opera companies in the country. I've been quite a bit at Virginia Opera. I've worked at Opera Carolina quite a bit. Recently, I've worked, done four shows for Lyric Opera of Kansas City. I've worked for Opera Pacific out in California. I did quite a bit there, and I ran their young artist program for a couple of seasons. I've worked at the Metropolitan Opera as an assistant director in New York. I've been a guest director at City Opera, which is, I'm sad to say, New York City Opera is no longer with us. Also at Manhattan School of Music and at NYU, guest directors at those universities. I've worked at a lot of universities around the country as a guest, Cincinnati Conservatory of Music and Carnegie Mellon and a lot. So it's been a really varied career, and it's been a great career. I really have enjoyed all the work that I've done, both professionally and on a university level.
That's an amazing background, and the UI Opera Theater is very fortunate to have you on board.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity because I do enjoy working with students. And it's an exciting time to be here in Iowa City. You know, the new School of Music building is growing as we speak, as well as the New Hampshire Auditorium. And so it'll be great to do something on a larger scale in the New Hampshire when that opens in the fall of 2016.
Tell us about this show that you're going to be putting on at the first part of May.
Right. It happens May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at the Englert Theater here in Iowa City, and it's called Deflatormouse, which is translated into The Bat. It's a very, very funny comic operetta by Johann Strauss, probably his most famous work. We will be doing it in English because I think that comedies, especially comic operas, work best in English for productions that happen here in our country. It's a very funny, effervescent, it's about champagne and toasting and mistaken identities and all the things you want a comic opera to have, with some of the best tunes that Strauss ever wrote, the Laughing Song and a great chorus in praise of champagne. So it is a very traditional, very funny, and very music-filled evening of theater at the Englert Theater. And it's been a long time since the University of Iowa has done a production of Deflatormouse. So it's kind of a great way to celebrate spring and to celebrate my first year here. It's a cast of 22 with a full orchestra, and it'll be a really, really exciting evening in the theater.
Now you're going to have an orchestra too under the direction of Dr. William LaRue Jones.
Correct.
So give us a brief synopsis about this show.
Well, it sort of takes place, it's about seduction, mistaken identity, and a high society party thrown by Prince Orlovsky. The lead man in the piece is a man named Eisenstein. He's about to be jailed, and his wife is trying to keep him out of jail, at the same time being seduced by an old flame. But Eisenstein's friend, Dr. Folke, has a plan to exact revenge for a past prank, which kind of brings the name The Bat into it. And everyone ends up going to the party, and all of these plots come together. So it sounds a little complicated, but it's really a delightful show that moves very quickly, and some great characters, some really fun characters that I think audiences will relate to. And as I said, just some of the best tunes that Johann Strauss ever wrote.
And Orlovsky is kind of a neat role in itself.
It is, yes. He's the prince, and it was written by Strauss as what they call a pants role, so that a mezzo-soprano, a female character, almost always plays this role. That's the way it was intended to be originally by the composer. And we do have double casting in our production. There are the roles of Rosalinda, Adele, and Orlovsky are all double cast, different students here at the university. And we have two great mezzo-sopranos that will be switching off playing the role of Orlovsky. And it's kind of fun to have that pants role. It adds another dimension to the role that normally wouldn't be there if a man did it.
I saw that you were going to have the University of Iowa faculty sponsor singing one of the roles as well.
Actually, it's a speaking role and not a singing role. The role of the jailer, Frosch, and Dr. John Muriello is indeed doing that role. John and I go back a very long time. I first directed him back in 1996. And he's really the reason that I came to the university for the first time. He had come here as a voice faculty member in 1997. And when they needed an interim director of opera, he's the one that gave me a call and said, could you come and help us out here? So it's great to have John. John is an accomplished performer. He came back to the Skylight as a guest for me many times when I was the artistic director there. A great baritone. And this is, like I said, it's not a singing role. It's an older character role who is a speaking part in this operetta. And I'm really happy that John's going to be doing that because he is one of the funniest men that I know.
He does have a knack on stage of
he definitely does. Being
very, very humorous.
He is. And then he's got, I mean, you won't hear it in this production, but he's got the most glorious baritone voice. He is an incredible singer. So he does operetta very well. And we've done so many Gilbert and Sullivans together because very few performers can sing as beautifully as he does and be as funny as he is. That's just a rare talent. So he's a real asset.
How can folks get more information and get tickets?
We can call the Englert box office. The Englert box office number is 319-688-2653. You can get tickets through the Englert box office. You can also order tickets online. The website is www.englert.org. And again, our performances are Friday and Saturday, May 2nd and 3rd at 8 p.m., and then we have a Sunday matinee at 2 p.m. on May 4th.
Bill Tyson, associate professor and director of opera at University of Iowa. For more details on the University of Iowa's Die Fledermaus production being held at Iowa City's Englert Theater early next month, please go to the Englert's website at englert.org. Other university opera offerings in April include the University of Northern Iowa's Opera Spring performances on Friday and Saturday, April 11th and 12th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. at UNI's Russell Hall. They will be presenting Purcell's Dido and Aeneas with UNI Opera and Cantori, as well as Seymour Barab's A Game of Chance with UNI Opera. The Iowa State University Opera Studio will be presenting a concert at the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall on the ISU campus in Ames at 7:30 on Thursday evening, April 24th. And the Drake University Opera Theater will present Roram's Our Town at Cheslow Auditorium on April 26th and 27th at 7:30 p.m. And the Drake University Opera will present the Mikado on May 2nd and 3rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Harmon Fine Arts Center on the Drake campus in Des Moines. Don't go away. Dr. Lee Nelson will talk about the Metropolitan Chorale's Diamond Jubilee Concert. Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble delves into the world of music school grads learning how to be folk musicians. A superb guitarist will present an astounding concert for the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society later this month. And the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist heads to Iowa to perform a solo recital. That's all ahead. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
I'm just so thankful that the Cedar Valley has a group like the Metropolitan Chorale. It's an outlet for singers and musicians to perform and keep alive the great choral orchestral works written, as well as champion new works. And I think this is just what makes the Cedar Valley have these sort of musical gems, these groups like this. It's so important, and I'm just so thankful to be part of that culture.
Dr. Lee Nelson holds the Zahn Chair in Choral Conducting at Wartburg and is their Director of Choral Activities. Lee also serves as the Music Director and Conductor of the Metropolitan Chorale. The Metropolitan Chorale is celebrating 60 years of singing as the adult community chorus in the Cedar Valley. Their first Diamond Jubilee concert is next Sunday afternoon. Lee fills us in on how the ensemble first got started.
It was a project that the American Guild of Organists organized. They wanted to sing a Messiah. They wanted to get a number of the churches together to create a community Messiah performance. And that actually happened back in the 40s. And they got the group together, and like many community groups or civic ensembles, they sang and they decided this sounded great, we should continue to do this. So the Messiah kept happening every couple of years, and finally in 1954, the group drew up the Articles of Incorporation to create what is now the Metropolitan Chorale. And we're staying true to the initial purpose of the group, which is the Articles of Incorporation say that they shall be there to provide an opportunity for singers in the Waterloo and surrounding communities to perform varied and great works of choral literature for themselves and for the general public. And that's what the group has maintained to this day over the past 60 years, creating a singing opportunity for anything from novice beginning singers to people who have performed all over the world to sing the great choral orchestral music.
So what's so great about singing in a choir?
That's a great question. I think part of it, a major part of it, is the sense of community that is created. Singing is one of the most personal things one can do. It's really a reflection of who you are. And in many ways, I've heard someone refer to singing as crying in front of someone. It's a very personal thing to do. And so when you share your own voice with 70, 80 other people around you, you realize that you're part of something much larger and much bigger, especially for those who've never sung before. When they first sing one of the great choruses out of Messiah, for instance, they realize that they are part of something that they've never experienced before, part of something that is much bigger than themselves and something that they couldn't create on their own. The Chorus America, which is a national group that deals with community ensembles, just did a recent study, and they said that there is now over 32.5 million adults singing in North America right now through civic groups. So it's become something that our culture has embraced and continues to lift up. It's up 10 million from 20 years ago. So
there's something about being in a choir and then having the music. So, I mean, you're surrounded by this gorgeous sound. It's so incredible.
It really is. Especially with the civic group like this, a community group where you have all different walks of life. We have, of course, some music teachers, but for the most part, we have doctors and lawyers and teachers and engineers and welders at John Deere and every walk of life who come together to simply share in something that is just beautiful, that is just something that opens up their heart and their mind and allows them to experience something that they perhaps can't do anywhere else.
And one thing unique about the Metropolitan Chorale is that you do not have auditions.
Right. The board has maintained that we need to maintain the identity of a non-audition group so that we have anyone who wants to sing have the opportunity to be part of something like this. And it makes us really quite unique. It allows for a wide variety of ages. We've had anywhere from, I think our youngest singer was 15 years old, and our oldest singer who continues to sing is, I believe, 93. So everything in between. It really encourages lifelong singing. It encourages singing for a lifetime, not just a halftime.
Lee talks about their spring concert and shares some distinguished names of former Metropolitan Chorale conductors.
Matthias Abbas is one of the founding conductors, but people that might recognize these names, Charles Matheson, Joseph Junta, who's down in Des Moines, of course, Les Hales, another big name, Graham Cohen, Jerry Kreitzer, Paul Torkelson, my predecessor at Wartburg College, and the person who was in between Paul and I, Weston Noble, who did a Messiah and celebrated the 55th, I believe.
Now, this year, in celebration of this 60th anniversary, you're going to be including excerpts from the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about your 60th anniversary concert and what you have planned.
The spring concert is on Palm Sunday, April 13th at 3 o'clock. It's called Music for a Holy Week, and the first half is going to be the Fore Requiem. And on the second half, what we did is asked the members what pieces that they have sung with the ensemble that has touched them and they'd like to repeat. And we've come up with a mini Messiah on the second half where we're doing three of the great choruses plus two of the arias. And then we're interpolating two other songs, Ave Verum Corpus, which I think if the ensemble had a traditional song that they sang every time, it would be probably the Mozart Ave Verum Corpus. And then Chesnikov's wonderful Salvation is Created will also be part of that. So it's in three sections, birth, crucifixion, and resurrection is the third half, which outlines the three sections of Messiah.
Well, tell us about some of the soloists.
Yes. We've got wonderful soloists. First on organ, which is featured throughout the entire Fauré Requiem plays all the way through, is Dr. Karen Black, who's our accompanist for the Metropolitan Chorale. She's a wonderful organist who has performed throughout the Cedar Valley and is a professor at Wartburg College in the church music department. And then our soprano soloist is Dr. Jennifer Swanson from Loras College. I believe this is her first time singing with the chorale. And then we're really excited to feature one of the Cedar Valley's own singers, a UNI student who got his undergraduate degree in vocal performance and is currently working on his Master of Music in Business Administration, even though he's going to go on to be an opera singer, is an opera singer. His name is Reese Talbot, and a wonderful bass baritone who's been singing with San Francisco Opera and is returning out there, and we're really excited to have him featured on both halves of the concert.
And you're also going to have an orchestra as well.
Yes, Hunter Cappuccioni has been putting that orchestra together, featuring a wide variety of players from throughout the Cedar Valley. What's interesting about the Requiem is that there's solo violin, and that's it. The rest of the orchestra is violas and cellos and double basses with a few wind instruments. We're doing a chamber version of the Fauré Requiem.
And tell us then a bit about the Fauré Requiem, and there's several movements that are particularly well noted.
Yeah, the work was written back in the late 1800s, 1887, I believe, was when the first edition came out. And there's three editions. There's three different ways one can perform it. The first edition came out, it had only five movements, not seven movements. Then in the 1890s, he added two more movements and filled out the orchestration a little bit. And then there's a lot of debate about the final edition, which came out in the early 1900s, where they feel that his publisher wanted to have a concertized version of it. So many scholars have talked about which edition should we use. And we're going back to the initial orchestration. So a small, beautiful, intimate setting.
Well, tell us about the two famous movements of the Requiem.
Well, of course, there's the great Sanctus, which gets performed again and again. The whole opening, it starts very slow and soft in this kind of call and response between the sopranos and the basses and tenors. And it just builds with every holy, holy, holy. It just builds more and more till this culminating point when the orchestra just explodes with sound on Hosanna. The other movement is the In Paradisum, the final movement. The whole Requiem, it's very different than any other 19th century Requiem. The Fauré Requiem is very different in that composers of this time were very much going with a much more dramatic approach to the Requiem, playing up the idea of fire and brimstone, the Dies Irae of Verdi Requiem or Berlioz Requiem. Those are all such great works, very intense, and there's lots of ferocity in the sound. Fauré takes a totally different approach. He says he wants this to be a peaceful approach to death. And so the whole work is very, very ethereal. And the In Paradisum is a perfect example of that. If you wanted to understand what the whole work sounds like, simply listen to the In Paradisum, which is just the simple accompaniment with sopranos singing this beautiful lyrical melody. And it just kind of lulls you into let the angels and let peace be with you in paradise. And that was his approach. He uses very little of the Dies Irae text.
Dr. Lee Nelson is Wartburg's director of choral activities and serves as the music director and conductor of the Metropolitan Chorale. To find out more details about the Metropolitan Chorale and their Diamond Jubilee concert season, please see their website at met-chorale.com. Today and tomorrow are the last 2 days to enjoy Iowa City's Mission Creek Festival. For more details, please see their website at missionfreak.com. Next Thursday, April 10th, Iowa Public Radio Cedar Falls Studios will be hosting an open house from 5 to 7 p.m. You'll have a chance to chat with IPR's new executive director, Myrna Johnson. We will also be presenting an in-studio concert by Americana band Brother Trucker at 7 p.m. in Studio One. This event is free and open to the public. Please join us at our Cedar Falls studios if you can. Just ahead, Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble explores how two music school graduates decide to learn how to become folk musicians. We'll hear details about the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society and their upcoming concert featuring a world-class guitarist. and will speak with the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition champion about his gold medal journey and about his UNI recital next weekend. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. It's the Iowa Art Showcase. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum.
I'm Karen Impala. Each week at this time, we feature concerts and recitals recorded
throughout
Iowa.
Bringing the cultural richness of our state to your radio. Iowa Public Radio Classical.
This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. In order for some musicians to mature, they need to challenge themselves. That's what two Luther College graduates did last spring when they left Acora to push their folk music forward. In February, they revisited their old campus to share what they'd learned with students while unveiling their debut album. Iowa Public Radio's John Pemble reports.
On a stage at Luther College, two young women in their early 20s play an original song as the duo The OK Factor. The last time they performed here, they were seniors in the College Symphony Orchestra. They've returned to play and teach during the 43rd Annual Dorian Orchestra Festival, a two-day series of workshops for advanced high school students hosted at Luther. Classical music is at the core of the college's music program, but cellist Olivia Hahn says this is not what they came back to talk about.
Classical music is just the way that string players are taught to play, and it's a good foundation, and it's something that we needed in order to do what we do now. But I think it's important, and I think the reason we want to share what we're doing is to just show that there are other avenues that you can take.
When Olivia was a junior, she decided to take a new direction when she wrote a fiddle tune and asked violinist Carla Dittmeyer to play it. They became fast friends and formed the modern folk band, The OK Factor. They now live in separate cities, Olivia in Memphis, Carla in Atlanta, but the duet has never been more active. They just released their first album, Water Street, and it opens with an adaptation of the folk tune, Wayfaring Stranger. Carla says this version was created as an assignment for a 20th century music history class to demonstrate how composer Béla Bartók implemented folk music in his symphonic works.
So we did an example of each different way, and those ways were just the tune by itself, unaltered. The second way was adding accompaniment to it, and the third way was adding fragments of that.
For most of their songs, Carla and Olivia alter a music fragment to sound like country, folk, or rock. While their techniques come from classical training, Olivia says some of their philosophy comes from legendary folk musician Pete Seeger.
Pete Seeger recently passed away, and the New York Times had an article about him, and somebody sort of described what he did with folk music, and They said he was a part of kind of the like ever evolving folk music tradition. And so I think that's something that we latch onto. And I would say that this is a big difference between folk music and classical music. Classical is always interpreted the way that it is on the page. You try to stay true to what's on the page. Do what the composer wrote. You should. That's right. That is how you should play. Folk music, I don't feel, is that way. There are different riffs, there are different chord progressions. It's evolving, it's ever-changing. And so I think we want to be a part of that. We have our foot in the door. We take fragments of the folk tune in its entirety and then put it up against something that we wrote.
We're the OK Factor. My name is Carla, and this is Olivia.
To demonstrate this technique of ever-changing music, Olivia and Carla conduct workshops, like this one, during the Dorian Orchestra Festival.
So, chopping is what we're actually going to start with.
Being able to go and talk to students and say, there is more out there than what you're doing in this room right now. And the more you practice and the more you become comfortable with yourself and comfortable with your instrument, the more you can do.
One quick thing about these accented rhythms is there's a technique called ghosting the notes.
After demonstrating various techniques, the two dozen high school students sight-read music by the OK Factor, with instructions to change rhythm accents to their personal liking. It's like jazz improvisation, but with more structure. Olivia says they never know how students will react to these workshops, but
if one student goes home and says, this is possible, or they're inspired or influenced to try something new with their instrument, with music in general, then we've done something right, I think.
Olivia Hahn and Carla Dittmeyer will continue scheduling workshops in high schools and colleges, summer festival performances, and if all goes well, they'll move back to the Midwest by the end of the year. For Iowa Public Radio, I'm John Pimble.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thanks to Iowa Public Radio's arts and culture reporter, John Pimble, for sharing that story. Look for the OK Factor on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Bandcamp. All across the state, throughout this month and into early May, our university and college music and art departments, performing arts venues, and professional orchestras and choirs will be presenting their final and best performances of the season. Try to attend as many of those remarkable season finales, recitals, and gallery shows as you can. Don't go away. Guitarist and president of the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society, Stephen Kennedy, tells us about an incredible concert being held on April 19th featuring an outstanding guest guitarist. And Vadim Kolodenko, the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist, talks about his upcoming solo engagement at UNI's Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center. That's all ahead. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio.
You know, with the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society, you know, we thrive on membership and donations, and, you know, we're really kind of serving a very niche market, you know, just pretty much classical guitar. So, you know, we really encourage people, if they enjoy the arts and enjoy guitar and classical music, then, you know, really consider becoming a member, or at the very least just trying to attend some of our events. And with the help of a few other people, I think we could really make this organization into a great thing.
Guitarist and president of the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society, Stephen Kennedy, talking about Iowa's Classical Guitar Society. This is the Iowa Art Showcase. While the guitar's history dates back for many centuries, the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society is definitely the new kid on the block. One of their ways to inspire Iowans to get involved is by hosting guitar recitals like their upcoming concert with internationally recognized guitarist Judicaille Perroy. Stephen fills us in on Judicaille's concert and how the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society got its start.
They officially formed in October of 2011, and we've kind of slowly been building here over the last couple of years. Our main goal is to really promote classical guitar here in the central Iowa area. We do that through hosting guest artists like Judicaille Perroy, who we will be having coming up here in a couple of weeks. And we do that also through master classes and through various live free performances for amateur and professional guitarists here in the area.
Now, last year you hosted Vladimir Gorbach, which we were able to interview. Thank you very much for getting that all to happen. Tell us about this year's selected soloist.
Yes, Judicaille Perroy, who is the man that we have coming up on April 19th. And kind of similar circumstances with him. He won the Guitar Foundation of America's International Artist Competition in 1997. Vladimir Gorbach had won it in 2011, so there's a bit of a history there between the two. And the organization that manages both of those individuals, Arnwes Artists, had contacted us about bringing in Judah Kael, and so we met with our board of directors and decided that he was the best choice, both with his skills as a guitarist and also with the budget that we had to work with.
And he's got quite an amazing background. He's released something like 5 CDs and teaches and performs all over the globe. Tell us a little bit more about his background.
Yeah, he's from France and he tours all across the world. And this current tour that he's coming up on, he'll be entering in the U.S. on April 6th, and he's doing a handful of concerts. And yeah, he just tours and performs quite a bit and also records quite a bit as well. His latest CD, I believe, has been released on Naxos, and it features works by Bach.
And he was sort of discovered as a child prodigy, or was claimed a child prodigy. He made his first solo performance when he was just 11 years old.
I believe he did 2 Vivaldi concertos, which is quite impressive.
At a very young age. Well, now tell us about the concert that he's going to be presenting when he comes to Des Moines.
Yeah, he's got a great program. He'll be doing a Fantasia by Legnani, a piece by Johann Dubez, a piece by Takemitsu, and then also a Prelude, Fugue, and Allegro, BWV 998 by Bach, which that's a personal favorite of mine, so I'm looking forward to that. And then he's also performing 3 works by Manuel Ponce, including his Prelude in E major, and then 2 theme and variations.
Now, you mentioned that you particularly like the Bach piece. Why is that?
Well, Bach is actually one of my favorite composers. I love the music of Bach. My latest CD has BWV 995 on it, a lute suite. And this BW 998, which Peroy is going to be performing, that's a piece that I'm currently working at myself, so I'll be in the audience probably taking some notes myself.
And it has some unusual things, even for a Bach work, and they think it probably was written for a lute or a harpsichord.
Yeah, actually, that's something I've done some research on, and likely it was probably written for the lute harpsichord, which is an instrument that it's essentially a harpsichord, but it's designed to sound like a lute. And there's a little bit of controversy. Some people, debate what exactly it was written for, but from what I've read, it seems that it was a legitimate instrument that Bach himself owned a couple of them and enjoyed the sound of a lute, but he didn't know how to play the lute, so the lute harpsichord sort of helped to bridge that gap, and it seems that that's probably what he originally wrote this piece for, as well as all of his lute suites.
Tell us about the style of his playing. He's been noted as having a splendid articulation, bright tone, and he plays an Australian guitar.
Yes, and I don't know the background of his guitar, but from watching some videos, yeah, it does seem that he uses a spruce top guitar, which tends to be much better for playing really all music, I think, in my own personal opinion as a guitarist. But particularly for Bach, for instance, the sound that comes off of a spruce top guitar travels at a faster rate of speed and provides more clarity, which helps with a lot of the contrapuntal aspects of Baroque music and really all music.
Tell us about his recital, how folks can find it, how they can get tickets, and more information.
Yeah, the best way is to go to the heartofiowaguitar.org or heartofiowaguitar.org, and there we have all the information. You can kind of browse through and find the different pages that you need. As far as tickets go, we'll be selling them right at the door. And again, that concert will be Saturday, April 19th at 7:30 p.m. And it will be taking place at the Capitol Hill Lutheran Church, 511 Des Moines Street in Des Moines, Iowa. It's in the East Village. And to me, if you look to the skyline, it's really the only church steeple in the area. So that's an easy way to find it. And so, yeah, the concert starts at 7:30. And then afterwards, we'll have refreshments and treats. And you can come down and meet Judah Kael and also buy a CD and engage in some nice fellowship with other guitarists.
And now you're giving a recital tonight at 7:30 at the Redeemer Lutheran Church on University Avenue in Des Moines.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's a concert. It's free and open to the public. My debut CD, Pequeño Vals para Florencia, will be available for sale. And I love the acoustics. It's a great church and at least sounds good to me as the performer on stage. So I certainly hope that's the case for the audience members. And welcome anybody to come, and I'd love to meet some people.
Guitarist and president of the Heart of Iowa Classical Guitar Society, Stephen Kennedy, talking about internationally acclaimed guitarist Judy Kyle Paroi's guest recital, along with Stephen's own recital tonight at 7:30 at the Redeemer Lutheran Church in Des Moines. To learn more details about these recitals and how to get tickets, please go to heartofiowaguitar.org. The Salisbury House, the Des Moines Arts Center, and UI's Obermann Center for Advanced Studies are joining forces to host the second annual Iowa Humanities Festival on Saturday, April 12th, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. For details and tickets, go to salisburyhouse.org. The Hearst Center for the Arts in Cedar Falls is celebrating its 25th anniversary Hearst Lecture Series. Lecturers will speak about the late farmer poet and University of Northern Iowa professor James Hearst and his works. For details on the series, go to hearstartscenter.com. The Ames chapter of the Des Moines Metro Opera Guild will present the DMMO's Opera Iowa Educational Touring Troupe in their Arias in Ames concert tomorrow afternoon at 2 at the Northminster Presbyterian Church in Ames. Tickets are available at the door. Students are admitted free. And in conjunction with the Des Moines Metro Opera Summer Festival staging of Jake Hagee's opera Dead Man Walking, based on the book of the same title, the DMMO is collaborating with several organizations to present educational activities addressing the social and legal issues surrounding capital punishment and the death penalty. This month, on Thursday, April 10th, there will be a screening of the Academy Award-winning film Dead Man Walking at 7 p.m. at the Floor Cinema in Des Moines. On Tuesday, April 15th at 4 p.m., the Des Moines Metro Opera will present an art exhibit and gallery show called 17 Minutes, held at the Prairie Meadows Gallery at the Rasmussen Center at Grandview University in Des Moines. The 17-minute line of text will be interpreted in a juried exhibit by Grandview University students. Selected works will also be on display during the DMMO Summer Festival season at the Blank Performing Arts Center. And on Sunday afternoon, April 27th at 1:30 at the Des Moines Arts Center, the Des Moines Metro Opera's Dead Man Walking stage director, Christine McIntyre, will host a director's insights discussion and performance about the Des Moines Metro Opera Summer Festival production of Hagee's opera, Dead Man Walking. For more details on all of the Des Moines Metro Opera's upcoming staging connections around Dead Man Walking and summer festival events and performances, please see their website at DesMoinesMetroOpera.org. Also this month on Iowa Public Radio Classical, we will be presenting our Performance Iowa Arias in April series. This series features three performances of the Des Moines Metro Opera's 2013 Summer Festival season, as well as the UI Opera Theater's production of Mozart's La Clemenza di Tito and the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater's performance of Puccini's La Bohème. Our Arias in April starts at 7 this evening and tomorrow afternoon at 2, with a presentation of the Des Moines Metro Opera's 41st Festival season performance of Gounod's Romeo and Juliet. For a detailed Arias in April listing, please see iowapublicradio.org and choose At the Opera with IPR from the Classical button drop-down menu. Just ahead, we'll talk with the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist before he heads to UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn to perform a solo recital. You're listening to the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. Welcome to Iowa Public Radio's Performance Iowa broadcast.
Hi, I'm Kurt Snook on the choral tradition. Today,
welcome to University Concert. I'm Karen Impala.
Bringing the cultural richness of our state to your radio, Iowa Public Radio Classical.
What I found the most fascinating in States is audience and people and how enthusiastic people are about music everywhere I've been. And this is really great, especially compared to other countries I've been. The audience here is very special, and I am so grateful to all people who are coming to my recital, and I hope they will enjoy music.
Vadim Kolodenko, the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist. Vadim will be appearing at UNI's Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center on Sunday, April 13th. Welcome back. This is the Iowa Art Showcase on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom. Vadim shares insight into what it's really like to perform in the challenging arena of piano competitions, as well as a bit of history on his early piano career.
My parents are not musicians at all, and I don't have any relatives who somehow connected with classical music. It was originally my mother's idea to do musical school, and I went to what we called in post-Soviet countries special musical school, which means that almost all our time we are just practicing, we are learning about music, about musical forms, about theory of music, history of classical music. And of course we have all subjects like in normal school. And then I graduated from that school at age 18 and moved to Moscow Conservatory, which was a major improvement in my musical education, because I had great teachers there. And it's, you know, all ended up with prize on Cliburn competition.
Now, when you were 13, you came to the United States. You went on tour. So you must have been playing quite well by the time you were that age.
You know, I don't remember that I played quite well at that age, but I just remember that it was a fun to be in the United States. Actually, it was arrangement of Horowitz competition in Kyiv, who took care of this concert tour, and I and a few other people, we played in New York, in D.C., and in Boston. And what I remember, just fantastic concert halls there. But it was really interesting experience. And I've been to States in 2006 in Utah, in Salt Lake City, because of Gina Bachauer piano competition there, and I got surprised.
And since then, on the competition circuit, and you definitely have won numerous competitions, you've had the opportunity to work with some amazing conductors and some amazing orchestras. Tell us about those.
You know, during this tour, I had fantastic experience of playing with Philadelphia Orchestra last August. And very interesting things are coming in next seasons. For example, I'm like an artist in residence with Fort Worth Symphony Orchestra, and principal conductor Miguel Harpidoya, he underwritten me for next season. We will play all 5 Prokofiev concerti. So this just great project, and all 5 Prokofiev concerti will be released on CD by Harmonia Mundi.
That sounds terrific. Please send all those copies to our station.
Okay, with pleasure.
Well, tell us then about what was it like to be involved with the Van Cliburn competition, and how winning this competition, not only the competition, but you also were given first place for chamber musician and for new work. You swept the whole Van Cliburn this year.
Yeah, it definitely was a jackpot for me. And, you know, I should say that, of course, competitions are not very pleasant for major artists. It's a fun for an audience, you know, it's like Olympic Games. And Cliburn competition is very famous of giving like a career boost for upcoming few seasons and for entire life. So when I applying for this competition, I keep in mind the importance of this event. And of course what happened afterwards, I mean after June 10th when I got prize, it was really great experience. For example, in this season Cliburn arranged 50 concerts throughout the States, and I had concerts in Europe also, and it's just another level of concertizing.
Now, in the final round of the competition, you had composed your own cadenza for this Mozart concerto, and people were just crazy about this cadenza. Tell us about how you wrote it and why you think it swept the audience.
At first, I'm very thankful to people who like my cadenza. Honestly, it's not very hard to compose something like this. It's just 2-3 minutes solo improvisation. Many people find interesting that I composed it in airplane, which is very true, because before competition, I had my graduate exams in Moscow Conservatory, so it was really a hard time. So the only free time I had was on my way from Moscow to Fort Worth, which is around 18 hours with all layover in London I had. So it was inside my head before, of course, and I just put it on paper.
Now, folks have been saying that you are cheered like a rock star and that your playing is mesmerizing and exhilarating. Why do you think your playing is like that?
Frankly speaking, I think what's mesmerizing is music itself. I feel so happy when someone from audience approached to me after a concert and said that he felt tears on his eyes or he or she is very inspired by some music I played. And that's my goal. What's happening on stage, it's not about me, myself, but it's all about music, the pure music, which I would love to bring to the audience.
Now, when you come to Iowa, to the Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center, you're going to be presenting some masterpieces from two contemporaries, two geniuses, Liszt and Chopin. Tell us about some of the works you're going to be performing at the Gallagher Bluedorn when you come here.
So I'm really very excited about this program. I love lyric of Liszt, and I think that this part of his experience is very underestimated, because for most of people, Liszt is usually like, you know, about technical tricks, about very loud music, very fast music, which is not true. He was great musician. First of all, he was great musician. And second, he was fantastic piano player. So all works I'm playing in first part is just very, what I could say, unusual, at least for most of it. And in second part, I will play Barcarolle of Chopin and Preludes, cycle of 24 Preludes, and I am honestly very excited about this music. It's my inspiration for last like half a year. I already played it 3-4 times before, and it's really like you're narrate a story, you know, like you're telling a story. It's like live from the very beginning to the end, and I think it's very, very touchy.
Well, let's go back just briefly to the list. And most of these works are taken from his years of pilgrimage, where he was inspired by the works of Goethe. Tell us just briefly about the set of six works that you're going to be performing of Liszt.
Yeah, so first two ones are from age when he'd been to Italy. Sonetto by Petrarca, which is fantastic music. For example, I admire a recording of 104 sonnet by Vladimir Horowitz. I think it's probably the best recording I ever heard. And then I moved to Switzerland. I mean, this is from the years he been to Switzerland, this on the water stream. I'm sorry, is it the right translation? Because I know the French names and I don't know English one.
Right, Beside a Spring, I think, is the one you're talking about.
And then Clocher de Genève, the Bells of Geneva.
It's yes.
Probably my most favorite piece in the first part. And then I will play The Fountains at Villa d'Este. Is a very late Liszt work, and it already has perks of his very late style. and very mature one with very interesting harmonies. And it's like preparation for very famous Ravel work called like Play of Water. And in the end, I put his last Rhapsody. And again, like first piece, you know, the sonnet number 104, this Rhapsody is very famous because of recording by Vladimir Horowitz.
And he was very much into gypsy music and gypsy epics, I guess. And this Hungarian Rhapsody was the last in that series.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that after Rhapsody number 15, so it's 16, 17, 18, and 19 Rhapsodies, they're not only just about Hungarian folk music. It's a little bit more contemporary, I mean, in the meaning of contemporary of Liszt time, and more interesting harmonically.
Now, you were talking about Chopin and Liszt, and Liszt is like this years of a pilgrimage, is a journey, but with the Chopin, you said it was more like a lifetime, and these preludes are an incredible series that can be played separately or together, but you're playing the whole series. Tell us a bit about these piano miniatures.
What's very interesting is sequence of preludes in major keys and preludes in minor keys, and after a certain point, after prelude number 15, like minor keys preludes, they're completely dominating. And all major keys preludes after prelude number 15, you know, they're like poisoned by dramatic events. And when I'm playing this cycle, I have like a plot in my head. And it's just very inspiring when you're playing music with such a strong characters inside, very clearly shaped characters.
Vadim Kolodenko, the 14th Van Cliburn International Piano Competition gold medalist, will be appearing at UNI's Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center's Great Hall on Sunday, April 13th at 3 p.m. For more details and to purchase tickets online, please go to gbpac.com or call the box office at 877-549-SHOW. Today's Iowa Art Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this production goes to Bill Tyson, Lee Nelson, John Pemble, Olivia Hahn, Carla Dittmeyer, Stephen Kennedy, and Vadim Kolodenko. Program assistance was also received from Linda Morgan and the Clyburns' Maggie Estes. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner. Thanks for this show also goes to IPR's Phil Moss, KSFR's George Weston, and IPR's music director Al Scherz, along with IPR's Eric Jordan, Jason Burns, Garrett Van Leeuwen, and Cooper Holmeyer. Program research was provided by Mallory Sullivan, Nick Carlo, and Scott Bosco. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.